Welcome, travelers. I'm Josh.
I'm Glenn.
And I'm Lee Wanika, and this is Tabletop Journeys, where we will be your not-so-humble guides on the quest for RPG adventures.
Here at Tabletop Journeys, we are all devoted role players and storytellers at heart, and we absolutely love sharing our passion with you. On our show, we feature diverse tabletop RPG systems, demonstrating them through actual plays and breaking down the rules to provide you with tips, tools, and techniques to help you navigate them. We also love bringing the content creators behind these games into the studio to give you a peek behind the curtain with relevant and insightful interviews.
Let us help you get the most out of your story, no matter what game world or system you're playing, because detailed settings, heroic characters, diverse NPCs, and a focus on story over rules can make any campaign legendary. Now, here's a message from friends of the show.
In a world headed for disaster, five strangers with mysterious pasts are thrown together by the winds of fate to try to stop the unseen forces that threaten to destroy their world. Join Kraval, a dragonborn with no memory and no past, who is the first of the barbarians of the mountains to be seen in 1,000 years. Cotter, a penniless paladin, running from something or someone in his past. No one, the only tiefling monk the kingdom has ever seen, who has been expelled from his monastery for reasons he has not revealed. Adri, his monastic companion, who hides some deep dark secret she cannot reveal. And Arlen, once a simple farmer, until some mysterious event manifested sorcerous powers in him. They must travel the length and breadth of the Kingdom of Faro, searching for the disparate clues that will help them unravel the mystery of the failing of their land, while trying to hold together the unraveling threads of society's weave threatening to come apart at any moment. They will have to battle nature, plague, politics, and even the forces of the underworld as they attempt to discover and defeat whoever, or whatever, is attempting to poison their world and throw it into chaos. Relic of the Past is a novel-length story told via a clean, custom, 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons game. Find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found, and at poolmedia.podbean.com.
Welcome, everybody, to tonight's episode. Excited to be talking a little bit more about Fae. Joined tonight with my illustrious friends and co-hosts, Mr. Lee Wanika Miller, Mr. Glenn Myers. Gentlemen, how the hell are you? Is it as hot in Connecticut as it is in Maine right now? Because, good God.
I can say, from my experience, sitting in my home office bedroom all day at my day job, basically going out into the kitchen to grab food and come back to my home office bedroom when I'm doing TTJ stuff, it must be excruciating outside because my poor 6-year-old, 7-year-old air conditioner is barely hanging on. I do have to close my door, so it is fighting this beast all on its own. Our newer air conditioner, which is nice, takes care of the main part of the house. That's working like a charm, keeps the rest of the house cool. But I am barely keeping the humidity down. Didn't do sugar for the temperature today, least it kept the humidity down.
Yeah. I mean, it's fighting against all the hot air in there right now, Lee Winika, so I can understand why the air conditioner is struggling a little bit.
That's I was going to say all the lights shining on my beautiful face, but we can go with hot air. The fans know what's actually going on.
I'm here all week, try the veal. How about you, Glenn? How are you doing, sir? How are things? So is this the first summer in the RV, or is this?
Second,
okay.
This is our second summer in the RV. And yeah, we're a little bit more temperature sensitive, even with the AC running. And it's been hot as hell for the last week or so. Yeah. But tonight is the first night, the first evening that the humidity is finally broken and sitting outside, not even after sunset, but pre-sunset in the 6-7 o'clock hour was pleasant and nice. Very much enjoyed
an afternoon sitting in front of the RV playing some Days Gone on the outside TV.
Nice. Yeah, nice. It's been weird up here where it's like super hot during the day. And then at night, we have been getting like crazy thunderstorms. Like the thunderstorms up here are not uncommon in the summer, but they've been really like nuts for the last couple of weeks. And so I am glad at least that that things seem to have, abated on that front anyway. Yeah.
Josh, I just want you to make sure you channel those thunderstorms, because based on what we did and set up last week for Kraken Week, I think we need to have some kind of environmental encounter and really draw on some of the torrentialness and all the and the look and feel, so we can put that into our adventure
an underwater adventure. You want me to make sure I channel thunderstorms underneath the water?
No, for the part where they're getting to the spot where they go down.
Oh, okay. I suppose we can do that. Yeah. I like that idea. Yeah. And if you haven't checked out that video, go to our YouTube channel and see that. It's a good time. It was really exciting to sit down and feel creative. We've been working on the Kickstarter projects for a while now, and sometimes in the morass of getting that done, it's nice to get some new energy and some new juice in there. So that's been an awful lot of fun. So go make sure to check out our YouTube channel and watch the video that we did for Project Kraken. Anyway, without any further ado, gentlemen, let's go ahead and get into Faye. Lately on the channel, last couple of weeks, we've aired the actual play that we did with Jay and the updated rule set. Yeah, so much fun, first of all. That's right off the top. This is the second time that we've had the opportunity to go ahead and play Faye with Jay. And there is something about the game system that pulls a very specific role play aesthetic out of the three of us. And I'm not quite sure what, so maybe that's where we're going to start tonight, is talking about, why is it that, because the first time around, we were playing monsters the first time around. So that maybe that explains why those characters were a little bit darker, a little bit edgier, maybe something like that. But this time around, we were ostensibly playing mortals who, for various reasons, had interactions with the Fae, but they were still dark and edgy and a little broken. So what gives there? Like, why? What is it about this game, you think, that kind of pulls that out? And why would that be fun for somebody that wants to play a game or a character like that? So first question.
I have thoughts, but I want Glenn to go first, because I have an interesting thought, but I want to hear what Glenn's got to say on it.
Just right at the beginning, when he first pitched the game to us and we were looking at Faye in its first incarnation before I got to play Puddin' the Troll, Jay talked about it from the perspective of, this isn't a nice, friendly, you're the hero game. You're playing the monsters. And as monsters, you do not necessarily nice things. Right. Like, that was straight up front in the pitch. So going in, I already knew it was going to be a little bit edgy. We brought some campiness to that edge in the first game that we didn't bring as much in the second game, I didn't feel, that kind of softened it. I personally think that Puddin was a much lighter character than Ramen was. Ramen was a dark and troubled soul. Puddin was a happy-go-lucky troll who just wanted to eat you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
and I noticed that in the recording, there was some... Ramen needs some cookies and a black leather couch and a nice glass of water and to speak with somebody, because Ramen's seen some things, man. Like, he's rough.
It's the way Jay wrote him, and I just filled in the blanks. Like, he didn't say that all the people that were kept as slaves in the Fae realm were named after food, but I was a slave in the Fae realm, never met anybody from the mortal realm, and my name was Ramen, so I just filled in the blanks from there. And that created a pretty dark, and because it did straight up say that if you didn't work hard enough, they ate you. So that created a pretty dark and tortured soul, no matter what, growing up from birth in that kind of environment and then just escaping to the mortal realm for a year or so. There wasn't a whole lot
I could do. I feel pretty much what you feel on that, Glenn. We got, when we first played 2 years ago, we got all the information we needed on the title card. And then we got these amazingly well thought out pre-generated characters. There's an art form to giving good pre-generated characters that not only work for your game, but work so good you still want to play that character afterwards. You almost have a hard time writing your own character that would be as good as the pre-gen. That's how I felt about what I was given when I played the Maugwe. It's exactly how I feel about Krieg. It was just a brilliant character. I love what I was given to start with. And then the interplay that we did in both games together just took it to a whole new level for me. This is the character I wanted. Definitely the kind of character that I would have played or I wanted to play later on. Or I might want to do precursor missions. If this is how they ended, it would be fun to do missions before this, like the preview. Or maybe there's some Fae bullshittery that goes on, so now there's like back in time and maybe we all got a view of what could happen to us without any of the details, but we know we might die in a fiery plume, so now we have to adventure with that hanging over us. I think that could be
kind really like high. A Captain Pike knows how he's going to die kind of situation.
Exactly. But to your point, Glenn, we brought a level of camp which simply comes from the fact we're in a mall. And we're all 80s kids, right? And we know what mall life was like. Your little
brown-ass Mogwai is going, Daikini!
I just love pop culture references that fit the scenery. And that's what we did in one fashion or another.
Absolutely.
Whether it was mentioning, I'm taking the mannequin from Hot Topic or all that. We just started naming off mall stores. Some of these stores we were talking about probably aren't even in malls today, the 14 that are left. And it was but we did that. And with this game, we didn't have all that, but we had a spate of great characters and we had a good mission that was really just a brilliantly contrived and set up dungeon crawl. And we had a reason to be there. We had a way to be there. The adventure was constructed in a way that gave us time to work into our characters before we got to the dungeon crawl. Driving in the RV on the way to the spot, we got some good character development in there to give us an idea of what we wanted to do to play off of each other. Honestly, Krieg was ill-formed in my head, other than I wanted to be a bit of a crackpot kook that saw some things and nobody believed him. I knew that going in. But everything else about the character I played was formed really in that RV trip and the first bit of the scene where we're going down the stairs.
Yeah.
I think the moment I referred to you as Top and then you called me out on it and I said, and then I'll call you Griff, or I started coming up with all these names, even to the point where the GM started forgetting what was the character's real name.
Yeah.
That was all character traits that I formed because I'm like, I need to play the older guy. Josh is going to play the leader. You're going to play the novice who's new to our world, but dealing with stuff. That puts me in a situation where somebody has to be a bit of that comic relief. And the best way I know how to do that in a deeply dramatic and horror type story is through pop culture references. And so what I chose is, what's a redneck kook gonna know a lot about? Sports. So I just start naming off all the roided out sports stars I could think of and making those type of references. It was all because of role play. I think that's really where the fun that you're talking about, Jess, comes from. It's great base characters and a GM who set up a content creator who set up an amazing storyline that gives room to breathe so people work into their characters before they actually get to the adventure itself. It is almost like he did a collaborative world building exercise without actually having a table and dice.
Yes. Let me bring y'all to the site where my friend Bacon died on the road.
And right.
I would have, and I got to say that we, even though I guess maybe we should have seen it coming, and I didn't really put my finger on it then, but looking back, our characters and their backstories definitely already had like a Suicide Squad vibe going on.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Let me build on that for just a second there, Lewinika, because so you're right. I think that scene in the RV, like you said, like it was collaborative world building without the roll tables and dice, because we were just yes-anding off of one another. We were building our cadre and building our characters and who they were and what they wanted to do. while we were playing the game. Because Deacon Martin was a lot of things. The comic relief, he was not. And I commented about this in the recording about how similar in kind of the brain space Deacon Martin was to the character that I played in Big Adventure Game. Just the last AP that we had done just before that, where mm-hmm. it's like the zealotous, going to take control, doesn't trust the things that he is, zealot, right? Because that's the whole, that was Deacon's whole shtick, is that he, you know, he was secretly aligned with the Fae and bringing them something to go ahead and help. The resource that he was bringing the explosives to on the other side was not mortal. He was another Fae. So, like, that was the whole shtick from the beginning. But Deacon himself is also deeply untrustworthy of the Fae, of every other Fae except for the one that he's in league to, basically, right? That's the only good Fae. Every other Fae is worthy of disdain and destruction, sort of things. So he was a lot of things, but the comic relief, he was not. I loved that both of you guys were able to bring that a little bit, much to Deacon's chagrin, where it's like, you're not taking this very seriously, clearly, but you're having your own little banter, so whatever. You can have your banter over there. I know where my bread is buttered, and it's not here, kind of things.
All over the walls of the bunker.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah, right now my bread is buttered in about a 20 by 20 square. Yeah,
it's whipped and exceptionally soft.
Evenly spread.
Yeah, evenly spread.
Fine buttery mist.
Yeah. I love the fact that some games can provide that. Big Adventure Game allows that breadth of opportunity for character growth. I love the fact that Alex Vigna and Jay Moore, and our second time with an actual play with Jay.
Both of them, actually. Oh, I guess we didn't actually play with Alex the first time around.
First time. But I love the fact that they are able to create those opportunities for character to grow. I think we do a lot about DM and GM and storyteller tips and tools. Our actual plays, even the ones we are not running, many of them, if not all of them, are also a tip and tool. And certainly for content creators that are building their own games, your game system can be wonderful. That first adventure that people play, you got to give them the room to build the character. You got to give them room to move. Somebody can look at the page and know who the character is, and yet they can still make it their own. So when I play Krieg, that is going to be very different than 6 months from now when Jay is running this at a convention and somebody else is playing Krieg. I look forward to the time where I'm sitting at a table next to him while he's running in a session so I can just listen in and see how these same characters get played by other people. I think that will be very cool. That would be very interesting. And if he's running this scenario, I would love to be a fly on the wall when other people get that opportunity to build that camaraderie in that opening scene. When you can build good openings for or opportunities for growth, that's where great games are made. If you can do that in your starter adventure or in your convention experience, you're killing it. If you're a GM who wants to go to your local store and say, hey, look, I got a starter adventure in this set just to see if you guys know how to play it, come sit and play with me this one time. And if you really like it, we can set up something permanent. Make sure you do that. Make sure you give them characters that have room to grow and you have a story that gives them that ability, that time to connect.
Yeah. That very nicely brought me up to my second point that I wanted to go ahead and bring up today. And that was how neatly the system translated to three old guys who play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons and play a lot of like crunchier games. This is not rules light, but it is rules simple. The mechanic is pretty straightforward, and the ability to adjudicate all your challenges by basically either rolling against the environment, i.e. just making like a skill check or an ability check, right? Or you're making an opposed roll, so you're rolling against somebody else's. That translated really well, and I think that in general, the way the rules are now, and I know that we were seeing kind of a precursor of kind of the next incarnation of Fae, but I thought that differently from the first time that we ran it, I thought the rules were a lot smoother and a lot more intuitive this time. I think that there were some things that were that Jay maybe was workshopping the first time around. I'm thinking about like like grapple checks and stuff like that. So things that kind of were a little kludgy to begin with, that was very smooth this time around. Although I am still surprised by the sheer amount of damage that weaponry does. That's still way over the top in a fun kind of way. But the amount of damage that like a gun does in Fey is disproportional. It's a lot.
Yeah. It wrecks stuff.
It does, yeah. But I thought that was a lot better this time around. I thought the rules felt smoother and they translated easier to the table for me.
I would definitely agree. The rules were a whole lot easier to digest and the playthrough was smooth and dynamic. The one thing I would say in terms of the damage scale is while the guns do a ridiculous amount of damage, they also don't get as many opportunities to hit. And it's a lot, and it seemed like it was a lot harder for you to hit. Whereas Ramen,
too, yeah.
When he's going nuts with his baseball bat, I got as many swings as I had as my speed or something like that. So in the end, I was rolling multiple times to hit in a round instead of just once. So a lot of times Deacon would take that shot and then that was it. That's what he had. But
yeah, that's what he had. Yeah.
Yeah.
But combat for and melee, it felt powerful, even though it was smaller damage dice, just because as opposed to being you have two attacks or one attack or et cetera, and as much of a back and forth, it's like Monster of the Week where you're taking your combat round and instead of saying, these are the two small things that I did, you're just giving a general description of how you moved through those few seconds in time. And you might've got six hits off with your baseball bat or knocked down more than one opponent, but it was less about making sure that all of the movement was precise and less of a simulation and more of a narrative combat. Not full on narrative like Monster of the Week, but again, rules friendly, not quite light, but
yeah. Rules. The term I've kind of stuck on is like rules simple. It's not rules light. It's not like a PBTA where there's really no mechanics at all. That kind of, and it's very narrative, and it's not D&D or Pathfinder or whatever where it's like everything is structured down to the die type and the everything like that, but it's like there are some guidelines, and as long as you stay within the guidelines and then just keep rolling dice, you're going to be okay.
I think Glenn, you made the great point. It's I never felt that because Josh quote unquote played the wizard with his gun that did the big fireball vastly outpowered me, because he would get that one or he got a couple of those shots off and did massive amounts of damage. But I, as a primarily melee individual, and even though I did have some range stuff, was able to get in there and mix it up, and I was able to be successful and do things. I was able to use some of my other abilities and actively use my equipment, like setting the trap, which wounded and did things and impacted the encounters greatly. It was awesome that all of our abilities were able to come into play throughout the course of this adventure. I don't know about the two of you, but I don't think I left anything on the deck. I used pretty much everything I had at some point during that encounter. And that again speaks to the amazing construction of the pre-generated character and the quality of the actual starter adventure that we played. It was written specifically for Tabletop Journeys and our actual play. And I have been in talks with Jay afterwards saying, you gotta keep this mission together. This was really good. This was a great showcase for what you're talking about. So right. I look forward to seeing it in its later iterations and final iteration because I think it'd be awesome and I would play it again. This was just amazing. So much
it was
fun.
Clear. It was very clear that Jay put a lot of work into the balance of the encounter and making sure that the skills were balanced across the four available characters. Much to our chagrin, we only had three players, so we didn't have the one guy who could heal, but very much so. Like even my secondary skills were on point and used throughout the game. And it really just, it was a straightforward mission, but that's not anything to knock because of how well balanced it was and how it utilized everything that all the characters had and how well everybody was designed to fit together and be able to move through it. It was a lot of fun.
And
I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, and let's not cached on the quality of the NPCs involved. The personality that Jay put into the individual boogies, like the ones that actually had speaking roles, were definitively different NPCs. A bunch of them were whatever the stock boogie may have been, but each of them he role played with a unique personality perspective based on the scene and the scenario that was happening, whether they were afraid, whether they were bold, whether they were angry, whether they had given up and said, I'm just going for it or whatever. It was all well done. And then the two big speaking ones, Ramen's tormentor and then
Copperpot.
And then Copperpot themselves, the two big NPCs.
Got away.
They were amazing.
Yeah. I don't know that Copperpot got away. Wait a minute.
I don't think he got away.
I don't think
I think he was caught. He got away from me at the time. But you're right. He was caught in the blast, unless mortal, but.
Yeah. But I just love the fact that those characters were so evocative. Like, I had such disdain for Copperpot that it was. Yeah. I was fully in character, and I was like, damn the brakes, I will blow myself up if I get that some. I was like, whatever. Yeah. That's how I was feeling about those characters. It was like, this guy doesn't walk out of here in one piece. Yeah. That I can tell you. And that, again, exceptionally well-crafted characters, exceptionally well role-played NPCs. And I think that's probably where Josh will lean into Jay as a GM and how he runs the game.
It's almost like you're reading my notes here, Leewanika, because that was the next thing that I was going to say, is that just not really anything about the system itself, but certainly talking about the way that Jay ran this time. I think maybe this is probably a joint statement based on both the cleanup of the rules that we've seen since the first time around, but also the fact that Jay has been running Fae for 2 straight years. He's been running this and at conventions and everything like that. He ran a much better game this time around. And I think the only thing I want to go ahead and say about that is that if you have the opportunity to play at one of Jay's tables and play Fae with him, take it, because the stories that he's able to weave, exactly what you were talking about, like the way that he was able to create diverse NPCs, even though we really didn't interact, I think it was maybe 5 NPCs that we interacted with the entire time, but the way that they all felt distinct, and then his Copperpot was despicable. Like, he was like, and not even to mention Puddin's tormentor. Like, when we met them, the way that, and Glenn, your ability to play off of that, to go ahead and be like, oh wait, no, now I know who this is, now I know what's going on, it created this entire pall over the entire encounter. Like, so you've got 3 characters with very different kind of motivations, right? Ramen's trying to survive, Deacon's trying to go ahead and do something nefarious, and Krieg is trying to go ahead and get the job done. He's kind of that very like business-minded military mind, and all of a sudden Ramen is being taken out of contention, basically because of the PTSD that he's experiencing. And now it's, at least for me, I won't speak for you, Leewanika, but for me, it was like, oh, what do I do now? Oh, crap. Like, the third leg of the stool is gone and the stool's fallen over. What am I going to do? And so it was a brilliant move on Jay's part to go ahead and trot that out, I thought, to go ahead and try to wedge in between the 3 of us, because the 3 of us were rolling through that map. Once we figured out the synergy of our abilities and everything like that, like, there wasn't nothing stopping us. Like, we were going to make it to the end. And so I think that Jay needed to go ahead and do something like that, and then did. And it was the perfect stroke to go ahead and separate us a little bit.
This is a perfect opportunity for me again to call out the GM tip and technique that was displayed by Jay here. Once you have a good adventure, once you have good base characters and you go to role play them, as a GM, you have to watch what's happening, watch the interactions, and find ways to, one, create differentiation between the minions. Minions, unless you're got a group of robotic automatons, can't feel like robotic automatons. And even then, I question whether they should, right? One should seem somehow more menacing. Maybe it's a head tilt, so you get that Darth Vader emotion where the mask should not show emotion, or whatever. But you should be doing things in a way that give the players different feelings about each of the minions and the one they're fighting. You should make a player want to take out that one minion more than any other minion, unless one of their friends is in jeopardy. And then you're creating a dramatic choice for one of the other players based on what this one player is doing. That's how I felt about the way he dropped in Ramen's tormentor and the other things that were going on when Krieg was down to one hit point, one of the 14, 15 times he may have been down that low. And Ramen had to make the choice of taking out one bad guy or saving his friend. That's a dramatic choice that was created because we got the scene in the beginning. We had good characters that had that differentiation, and there was a dramatic choice. It's not like you're against five goblins. Goblin number one is doing this. Goblin number two is doing that. It was the goblin that just clobbered your friend is standing over him getting ready for another attack, and your tormentor is down at the end of the hall. What do you do? And a choice had to be made. Josh had a choice at one point of taking the shot or doing something else, and it's no, I'm taking that shot. Those are dramatic choices that only work if the GM differentiates those NPCs and gives them something interesting in the way he describes their actions. So that's the takeaway for storytellers out there. When you're at the table, describe those actions dramatically. Give players a reason to want to do a thing, and then give them a reason to be conflicted with another goal. Right. Then watch the game take place, and that's where magic happens.
All right, we're going to take a quick break there to hit up the middle of the show and pay some bills here, but we'll be right back talking more about our actual play of Fae with Jay Morris. Welcome to the middle of the show. We wanted to take a minute and thank the people who helped make this show possible, our Patreon supporters. We like to shout out our adventurer-level Patreons, so extra big thanks to Tim Morris, Joe Harney, Dave Rideout, Adam Scaramella, and Marty Napier. Patreon supporters get exclusive content, free copies of all of our published and unpublished game supplements, early access to episodes, and free invitations to our monthly games. You can learn more at www.patreon.com/ttjourneys.
Speaking of published material, have you checked out the supplements we have on DM's Guild? We have two full books, The Traveler's Guide to Collaborative Worldbuilding, The Traveler's Guide to the Multiverse, and you can combine it with all of our supplements to make your next role legendary. Go to www.ttjourneys.com/DMsGuild for more information.
If you're looking for Tabletop Journeys swag or need a fantastic set of new dice, then you should check out the Tabletop Journeys Spring Store and our affiliate, FanRoll Dice. You can make your first purchase through FanRoll at 10% off, and every purchase helps support the show. You can learn more about that at www.ttjourneys.com/FanRoll. And if you want to get some awesome t-shirts, hoodies, hats, or other gear, check out www.ttjourneys.com/swag to get redirected to our spring store. These are the same vendors that we use for our add-ons when we do Kickstarters and stand by their products.
But the best way you can support the show is by joining the conversation. Did you love one of the episodes? Did you disagree with something we said? Maybe you just want us to cover your favorite game system a little more or talk about a brand new system. Check us out at linktr.ee/ttjourneys. That's our link tree. And join the conversation.
We hope you're enjoying this week's show. So here comes the second half. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to us. And if your platform lets you leave a comment or a rating, why not hit the button and show your support? Thanks again for listening. And now on with the show. All right, we are back. Threw out a couple of points here at the beginning of the show here, talking about how the actual play ran for me and what I thought. What are your overall thoughts? What are some takeaways that you had of the game?
So I think my biggest takeaway from this particular encounter in Fae Mortals, which, I mean, getting to preview the up and coming, even though he doesn't even have it ready to even present for a Kickstarter yet was fantastic, but that is coming, so keep an eye out for it. But honestly, we've talked about it already. We've talked about how well the characters were written. And I don't know how you two felt about your character, but I'm going to go into that a little bit more deeply. I talked about just automatically making some connections and filling in some blanks with adding on things like everybody was named after food, etc. But really what all that boiled down to, aside from those little quirks that I could bring in, like yelling, but what about Hot Pocket? Which was another way that I figured that I could bring a little bit of levity to such a dark character also, sure. By yeah. the way. But really, it was the opportunity to sit down and play a character in what almost seemed like a scripted one-shot. It was a scripted one-shot, wasn't it? Designed to end the way that it did for Ramen. Like, everything about the whole thing felt right for him from start to finish. I actually got to play a character in one single one-shot with a full character arc all the way to accepting his death to try to stop this from getting worse in a few hours, and it was fantastic. Normally, to get that kind of development out of a character in terms of, like, mental shift, it takes multiple sessions, sometimes half a campaign. But because Ramen started out as a PTSD riddled victim who happened to escape, but then finds friends who show him that he can fight, letting him find himself in the fight when he realized that he could fight back, and the first time that we killed one, and just getting to the point where, like, you guys seemed like you were going to let one of them live, so he's like, nope, and full on Negans him to just end him now. None of these bastards are getting out of here alive with what they've done to me and my people. It was very fulfilling to play Ramen all the way through that arc, all the way to the point of saying, okay, I'm the only one left of my guys. I guess I'm taking them with me and blowing up the last of the explosives to just bring the whole place down. It was fantastic and wonderful. And whether or not he deliberately wrote it to be a one-shot that ended in potential disaster or not, I think it's fantastic the way that it is. And Jay, if you do write this to become some kind of a commercial adventure or formalized adventure in the Mortals book, I strongly encourage you to keep and encourage the "uh-oh, we're all dead" ending, yeah, because that was fantastic.
I love a very specific moment when your Ramen's tormentor had said something, and I don't remember the exact quote, but I distinctly remember, Glenn, you vocalizing or near vocalizing your indecision about what to do. And then Josh made the statement in character, and he said, "Ramen, remember what you're able to do." And I might be misquoting slightly, but you're stronger than they are. I love that moment. That moment was the whole bailiwick. So kudos to both of you for creating such a wonderful moment in scene based on what you were given and what you worked with. But again, I am at this stage of the game so fully in character, I at moments forgot who the heck Leonika was. Sure, I was really Krieg throughout this section of the game. And I was like, I think I had 4 hit points at that point, and I was like,
"You're getting
Let's
beat up.
Get yeah. it."
That was a great scene. And it was vocalized. So it was straight up, like, the guy that used to be his pit boss told him, "Get over here and kiss my boot," effectively. And he, like, hesitated and took a step. And, like, he was automatically falling into that. And then, it was a great scene.
So I need you guys to understand the weight that I carry on my shoulders with what I'm about to go ahead and say, because, and just bear with me on this, is that, Glenn, I'm so glad that you feel like Ramen's journey was such a success and so complete for a 3.5-hour, 4-hour session or whatever it was. You're right. To be able to go ahead and take a one shot and really truly explore the 5 phases of a character's arc and really feel like it came to a satisfactory ending is fantastic. And Leonika, I appreciate when you're saying, like, you're in the drama and everything, and Ramen is indecisive, and Deacon using his his charisma, is able to go ahead and motivate, you're better than they are, kind of thing. And I this with no glib and no joy in my voice at all. Deacon was always only out for number one. The only reason why he was trying to convince Ramen that, Ramen, you're stronger, so that way Ramen gets hit and Deacon doesn't. Like,
oh, yeah.
So I appreciate that, like, that you feel like you were able to get some satisfactory. That moment meant something to Ramen, and that's all that matters. But just for me, I would be dishonest if I did not say, yeah, Deacon's motivation was not empowering you, my friend. So, that is not.
No, I love it. I love knowing that that's his full motivation, because I knew that Deacon was not altruistic, but I didn't have a window into your mind, and that makes it even better.
Yeah, cool.
Because Ramen was naive too, like very.
Yeah, exactly.
Naive.
Oh, which Deacon absolutely was playing on. Like, I hate to be that guy, but that's what he was doing.
So, what that reminds me very much is the latest iteration of Battlestar Galactica. And Josh, I've made the comment, you would have, back in our LARP days, you'd have played a perfect Gaius Baltar. I really got that vibe from Deacon off the rip. And I knew when you were saying that, and I'm pretty sure Krieg knew it ish in the moment. That was more of a Gaius Baltar, somebody save my ass desire. But motivated Krieg in that moment was seeing Ramen rise up.
Yeah.
Seeing Ramen rise up, regardless of why you said it, it was like this was this weird situation where you were playing volleyball, and I'm mixing all kinds of analogies here, but you said it and Ramen spiked it, and I just got to sit there and say, and what? That was the moment. So it was more of an appreciation for what you did as a player and what, Glenn, you did as a player through your character that created that amazing role-playing moment. And the three of us have had a ton of them over the years, together and apart. We've been a part of great scenes that have done wonderful things in our heads, and this was just one of those moments. And I think, Glenn, your deep dive into kind of the character and the arc was really well stated. I would say Krieg did not complete his arc in any way, but I don't necessarily think Krieg needed to. I don't think Krieg was a character who had, quote unquote, the arc that needed to be traveled. I think of Krieg as being much more of the character actor character within this greater story. So while a prominent member of the cast, a prominent member of the team, he wasn't necessarily the focus. He was neither the leader who had a thing to do. He was not the young buck who does the thing. It's like watching the old SWAT. You had Hondo, and then you had who was in charge, and you had the young kid, and then you had a bunch of other members of the team that were in SWAT, and they all had good roles. Krieg was one of those other roles, right? Yeah. Ulrich was the guy's last name, the actor's last name. I can't think of the actor's first name. Skeet Ulrich's dad, actually, is who played the original lead character in that. Colin Farrell played him in the movie or whatever, but the younger guy who had just joined the SWAT team. That's how I envision Ramen, and I envision you being a cynical Hondo, probably more like Denzel Washington in Training Day than anything else. And I was just the guy there to aid the banter, and I was fine with that. It was an absolute joy to be a part of that. Not every character needs to have that full.
It makes sense full arc. It makes sense that you didn't feel like you had a full arc, and I would say that you already called that out earlier when you said that you think it would be great to play Krieg's younger years, even if he knew the Captain Pike doom ending, whether he did or not. And it's because Krieg's character was at the end of his arc already.
Yeah.
And you picked him up at that point and gave him life. Yep. And that's why, because you loved the character so much and you played him so well, that's what left you with that void of, man, I'd like to play his younger years so you could have a piece of that arc. But yeah, you did great with Krieg. He was just an end of arc kind of character. Yeah. He was older.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
You know, we get to see Ewan McGregor play him at three different stages of his life in the movies, and then the Obi-Wan series, which was off the freaking hook, right? And now Obi-Wan feels very complete to me as a character because I got to see him at those various stages. But he was perfect for what he was designed to do in A New Hope. Right. And his little snippets where he was a ghost, and in some other series it might be a reminder or a flashback or whatever.
It's a Christmas special.
Also perfect. But honestly, it was he needed to be in that spot at the end of the arc, and I thank you for illuminating that for me. Yeah. That's why I felt so good about it, even though there wasn't a full arc for him, because he was gone through that. And now the cool thing would be to get to play that earlier part of him.
I love that the three of us can come away from this – from any role-playing game experience with such different sort of takeaways, right? That always makes things like this fun, because I think that Deacon was at the beginning of his like second arc of life. He had an entire life before he did this, before he was in thrall to Surt and everything like that. And now he's beginning his next phase, which means that the tragedy which befell him at the end of the game, who knows what that does to his arc, because that is like his first... It's kind of like the first stop on his heroic journey. I don't know what happens to him next, because right now, again, he's filling a 30x30 cube with some fine particulates.
Or perhaps he was thwarted at the beginning of his arc to become a villain.
That's entirely possible too. So who knows? There's any number of things.
He was definitely a shiesty dude working both
sides.
He
could have gone in one of two ways.
Exactly. And but the other thing that I love is we have joked about this before, about how like all three of us play basically the same character all the time. In any of our actual plays, we play the same character with subtle, like there are like little knobs that are turned and everything like that. But for the most part, we play very similar characters. If I think back to like when we did the real thing, I was basically playing myself from the mid-90s. I think that there's a lot of connection between Puddin and Ramen to the character that you played, Glenn. I think that there's a lot of connection to Krieg to the character that you played, Leewinika, right?
So, they and all that's came from within spanning. Us, so I could
they all
could
came
see
from
that.
Within us. So I'm thinking back to what else I was doing when we were playing this game. So here I am playing Deacon Marn. We had just played Big Adventure Game, where I played another Zealotus character. We had also just ran session 5 of Star Trek Preservations, where I got the fantastic scene with Tobor and with Najar, where I was playing Commander Janok. And so there's that kind of character, that kind of very much like manipulative like puppet string kind of pulley character, right? And on top of that, Glenn, we'd had the scene with Androsius and Zindrid in Streams of Spiro, where we were talking, where we had that whole communication. Not that Androsius is necessarily a puppet master puller, but there was a lot of kind of political intrigue and political kind of wrangling that had to happen in that episode to make the things happen that had to happen. And so I'm looking at this, there's just a lot of different influences that kind of went into this character. And as a result, I have no idea where he winds up, because again, like this was exploding everything in the way that was happened to go ahead and take out Copperpot was absolutely unintended. That was actually on some level a mistake that Josh, a player, made when he tried to go ahead and do something that he thought was going to be very small. And again, because of the exploding, no pun intended, mechanic for how much damage that was going to do, that became a much bigger issue than I think Deacon understood it to be when he took the action that he took. So that's just an interesting observation that like the three of us came away from that final scene. Ramen very much saw like the end of his arc and went off into his fine red mist and triumph. Krieg at the end of his journey, like inevitable fate sort of thing. And Deacon, I'm supposed to be doing this job, and I just hit the detonator instead of I hit the detonator instead of not, kind of thing. And so it's very much what happens now. I love that. And I love that a game like this, and as a callback to earlier in the episode, I love that a game like this, where the mechanics are so straightforward, means that all of us can have this experience and the mechanics don't get in the way. They're a little bit crunchier than nothing, but they're not so crunchy that they had any way interfered with the game. The game felt very much like a Powered by the Apocalypse style game with a lot of narrative and a lot of really intense role play. And every once in a while, there was a little bit of mechanics that needed to be done to go ahead and spice it up or to decide how things were going to manipulate or how things were going to move, which dials were going to get turned, which levers were going to get flipped and stuff like that. And I love that.
I absolutely agree. Won't add anything more to that because that would just be repetitious. And while I am known for that, I am not going to do that this time. As we are getting on in time, I will say this. The other thing that I was very impressed by was a bit of yes-anding that the two of you did, where very early on as we started into the dungeon delve part of the adventure, Glenn, you mentioned, oh, yeah, I did left, right, left, or whatever. And Josh, you just magically knew exactly how to reverse that because I edited that episode. And y'all got it. And we had a And I, in game, as the character and as Lee Wanika was sitting here trying to write it down, couldn't keep up with you. I'm like, how in the actual, because in my head, when stuff like that happens in game, I, as a GM, will often say, oh, your characters would know, I'm not even going to make you roll, or something like that. But the two of you and Jay understood that and got it. And I'm like,
and that, my friend, is why Simeon always goes left.
And right. I cannot figure that out. Yeah. Always left.
Always left.
Whatever. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. We went to, because we went in the mission, we went always right.
Yeah.
He put his hand on the right hand side. Or maybe not.
No, it was left.
No, you're right. It was left. You're right. That's right. Because when we were on the first floor, we wound up doing the first floor backwards because we went left instead of right. Yeah.
Okay. Correct.
You're right.
So, and your the spatial awareness of my two co-hosts and the GM for this adventure blew me away as a human being. I don't get it. That is not how my brain works, and it has never been how it works. I am forever grateful that an early comic book I read as a teenager was Nightwing and Flash. I read it and immediately shared it with Marty, friend of the show, and who's a big Wally West Flash fan. I'm a huge Dick Grayson Nightwing fan, and that single one-shot comic book dealt with their friendship and the fact that Nightwing beat Wally to the end of a maze because he did the left-handed trick and Wally had to check out every single wrong way first. When Wally came out and Dick was waiting for him, that was, to me, one of the greatest moments in comic book history. And it's so small, unless you know that issue or you're me or Marty, its significance in my life is not there. But that is why every character I have in every adventure I go, if there's a maze or if we're going to get lost, I always say go left, is because of that comic book. And the fact that you guys did what you did just blew me away.
I have two things on that. One, Trish and I still, to this day, in the woods say, do you want to go right or left, honey? She says, let's go the Simeon method. And that we talk about it like perfect all the time. But the other is, do you realize that in this iconic story between Nightwing and Flash, that effectively that just means Nightwing was lucky?
Yes.
The maze had been on the if the exit had been on the other side of the maze, it could have taken him infinitely longer. He got lucky that he came to the exit first.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Even Nightwing has Batman plot armor sometimes. And I'm not opposed to using that advantage.
And
you know, his logic was sound, but he was just lucky that he found the exit on his side before having to go all the way around the entire thing to maybe 10 feet to the right from where he first started before he found the exit.
Yeah. The other thing that I find funny about that is he said it to Wally with such confidence that even Wally was second guessing himself. And I just love that.
Yeah.
Dick Grayson is a whole lot of things, but one of those things is when he wants to get like holier than thou and you know, I'm better than you, like he does that as well, if not better than Batman.
I was going to say, he gets that from Batman, And, you know,
so you learned that from the master.
Yeah. Pro trip. Now, don't look in the... I know that we're recording on camera, Jenny, because we like to see each other. If you hold up your finger and thumb on your hands, the one on your left hand makes an L. So that's how tell the difference.
Yours is not making an L. Your right hand is making an L for me.
No. It's an L.
No, that's not an L. That's backwards. Put up the other one.
What's that?
For me, it is. For me, that's an L.
Oh, interesting. You guys see it reversed.
Because
I'm sitting across from you.
In any case, if you ever get confused about left and right, that's one trick that you can go ahead and use.
I don't get confused about left and right. I get confused with remembering which came first as you rattle them off.
Fair enough.
Fair.
So Glenn was talking about the character arc development. What do you got?
Yeah, so you stole a bit of my thunder when you talked about if you, if you get the opportunity to see Jay out and, or go to a convention or go to a local game store, if you see Faye being run and he runs this game at conventions all over New England, most of New York, parts of Pennsylvania, he's been in New Jersey, he's all over the Northeast with this game at gaming conventions. If you're running a gaming convention, contact the show, look for Jay's contacts, ask him if that's something he can arrange and make arrangements to do. I'm sure he'd be happy to, if it fits in his schedule, if it's something he can do, make attendances and appearances. So I definitely would think that. But one of the other things I would say is the beauty of this game, any independent game, any game you want to run, whether it's independent or others, is all role-playing games need storytellers and GMs and DMs. And there are so many people on so many platforms asking for GMs that want to play live, want to play digitally, some mix of the both. If you're a player who's got a group and you don't have a GM, take the time to whatever game system your group wants to play. If it happens to be Fae, awesome. If it happens to be D&D, cool. Whatever it is you want to play. If it's STA, amazing. Don't hesitate to grab a good starter adventure and run that game as a one-shot. Don't hesitate to step in if somebody else is running a lot, but they're having stuff, life stuff, so they can't run every single session. Don't hesitate to say, hey, I'll run a one-shot to fill in a gap for you. Don't hesitate to take that step. There are things about being a GM that can be challenging or difficult, but if you've got a group of friends that are already playing, they're going to give you the bandwidth to learn the game. Josh mentioned it earlier. This game ran smoother than the game to start with. We played Fae the first time as it was getting ready to go to Kickstarter when it was done, but it was not. Jay had been running it for a while and play testing, but he does not have the experience. He did not have the experience then that he has now. And that's how it is when you GM. The first time is never going to be the best time. It's never going to be the easiest time. It gets better as you go, but you got to run that first game. So don't hesitate. Learn from games like this, even if you're not playing the system. Learn some from these techniques, how to make NPCs and minions interesting, how to make villains and banter, how to create open scenes for people to grow in their characters. Learn from that and run the game that you like to play. And I think Fae is a great place to start because it is real simple. It's got rules, it's got crunch for the folks that need to scratch that itch, but it's simple enough where you can also do what you need to do to just make the scenes move. So I think it's a great place to start. It's a great game to play. But even if you're not playing this game, you can learn a lot from this game and bring it to other games. Maybe you just like the tone of this game and you want to do it in a different system. There's that too. And if you like art, Jay's artwork is off the chain. Love the art for Fae. We didn't talk about it that much this time around. I know we did it in our first interview a couple years ago with Jay, but the artwork, the comic book that this was based on, it's just brilliant. It's fantastic. It's really good and evocative artwork. So for those who just love the art of role-playing games, check this out.
Totally agree. This is a system that is easy to pick up if you are familiar with role-playing games. The learning curve is not steep, which makes it nice.
One last thing that I want to talk about tonight is to let all of you out there in our audience know that it is with much sorrow that I'm going to be stepping away from Tabletop Journeys. I have some things going on in my personal life that I need to attend to, and a whole lot of kind of reconstruction going on, so to speak. The short version is I just don't have the bandwidth, honestly, to give Tabletop Journeys what it deserves, what you deserve as fans. I will still be around. I will be semi-active on the Facebook page. I will still be playing Lieutenant Camdril Najjar on Star Trek Preservations. And I may collaborate on a project or two in the future. But it's been a great journey with all of you. And I hope you have many more across the tabletop.
Glenn, you've been a huge part of what has made Tabletop Journeys what it is today over the last 3.5 some odd years that we've been doing this. You came on at a time when Lee Wanika and I really needed a calm, steadying voice to keep us from spinning off into the ether, yelling at each other all the time. The contributions that you brought to the show and to all the projects that we've done away from the show have been huge. I appreciate what you're doing and why you're doing it. And we're going to miss you, Mika.
What you've meant for the show, what you've done for the show, I'm not going to be able to quantify in any reasonable amount of time. And I promised earlier I wasn't going to go long on something, so I will not do that here. But I will say that it has been amazing sharing the mic with you for the last couple of years. You have brought great questions in our interviews. You've brought great viewpoints in our rules discussions, concept discussions, and book reviews. And I feel that they are instrumental in the thought process that we've had thus far. While I'll miss you on the mic, I know that you doing the things you need to do is important, and I look forward to seeing those successes as well, and I'm right here for you ever and always.
And I'm excited that you're going to be continuing to play Najjar, because you kick ass playing Najjar, so yeah. I'm glad that that's going to be happening too.
And you make it very hard for me to make good mysteries, so keep challenging me.
All right. So let's see here. What have we got coming up on the show next week? Preservations Episode 6 begins, which Preservation 6, Episode 6, is the second part of the story that began in Episode 5. It's not going to be the last part of the story that began in Episode 5, but that's a separate issue altogether. But Episode 6 begins on Tuesday. And then on Friday, in the normal show slot, we have another interview coming up with a game for called the Triangle Agency, a modern spy story. We're looking forward to actually recording that. We've been chasing the date a little bit here to go ahead and get that nailed down, but they will be on the show next week. So that is what's coming up on the channel.
In addition to all of that, we encourage folks to check out our YouTube channel. Our podcast continues on all of our pod channels and stations, whatever podcatcher you currently catch us on. Josh has been doing a vlog for the last couple of months, periodically releasing episodes direct to YouTube, as well as I have begun On the Right Path, another vlog series detailing this crazy podcast life and my take on other elements of what we do, all done, all being shown on the Tabletop Journeys YouTube channel. On the Right Path airs twice a week. It's scheduled for Wednesdays and Saturdays. We look forward and encourage you, as always, to comment where you can comment. If you're catching us on YouTube, ask questions, join our Facebook community group, come see us.
Yep, absolutely. All right, everybody, that's our episode. Short answer, as always, go check out Faye. And if you're ever at a convention with Jay, sit down at his table and play with him. So really worthwhile. All right, everyone. That's the show. So we'll talk to you again next week when we bring on the Caleb and the folks from the Triangle Agencies. Yeah. Until then, have a good night. Thank you.
Good night, all.
Later.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Tabletop Journeys. We would love to hear your feedback on our show today. Join us at www.ttjourneys.com, where you can subscribe to the blog to leave comments and see all the content that we publish beyond the podcast.
You can also stay in touch by subscribing to our Twitter, Tumblr, or Instagram at TT Journeys, joining our Facebook group, Tabletop Journeys, or by sending an email directly to podcast@ttjourneys.com. Our full episodes come out every week on Friday, and every Tuesday features actual play and gameplay showcase episodes. Looking for early access? You can support the show and get episodes before everyone else at www.patreon.com/TTJourneys. Check it out today and see all the awesome benefits we bring to our supporters.
Lastly, if you're listening to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podchaser, Spotify, or Audible, we would really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to the podcast on that platform. Thank you for listening and for being a part of our growing community. And we bid you fair tides, friends, for legends await.